I can hardly wait to go back to Scotland. Hi, I'm Rick Steves. The more I get to know about Scotland, the more I realize I'm just scratching the surface and having a good time anyway. This is a particularly big year for Scotland. Among the major celebrations, they're marking 700 years since the Battle of Bannockburn, which brought independence to the Scots. A big tourism push called The Homecoming is calling on anyone with Scottish heritage to visit the homeland this year. But the celebrations may be overshadowed in September, when voters decide on a referendum on seceding from the rest of the United Kingdom. To help us visitors plug into all the fun Scotland promises, and to overcome any of the challenges or confusion a visitor might encounter, we've imported three accredited Blue Badge guides from Scotland. Cullen Mares comes to us from the industrial heart of urban Glasgow. Anne Doig hails from regal Edinburgh. And Liz Lister lives nearby in the picturesque region known as the Kingdom of Fife. They're here to sing the praises of their favorite corners of Scotland and to debate the merits of what you should include on your own touring itinerary of Bonnie Scotland. Cullen, Liz, Anne, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So we'll start off with Anne. Anne, you are from Edinburgh. And how should we consider Edinburgh compared to Glasgow if we can't do everything?
Here we go. Well, when you come into Edinburgh, and if you arrive by train, you emerge from the railway station, and right above you is this ancient medieval city and a castle rising from the rock. And the scene is absolutely magnificent. I live in Edinburgh, and I never tire of it. I just absolutely love it, and I get really thrilled when I see that. I'm very pro-Edinburgh because of its blessed with wonderful landscapes, great architecture, wonderful history. But I have to say, there's real rivalries between the two cities of Edinburgh and Glasgow, and it can get quite nasty sometimes.
And I think probably 80% of the tourists, at least from America, are going to Edinburgh.
That's right. But they shouldn't miss out in Glasgow, because I would say, and I think the Glaswegians would agree with me, Glasgow is much more of a Scottish city than Edinburgh. During the period of the union with England, Edinburgh had the Parliament, and when it dissolved itself, the only way that you could make it in the world was to drop the old Scots language and adapt standard English. And everybody who was anybody, the landed gentry, they all went down to London and had houses there and became very Anglified, whereas Glasgow stuck to its Celtic and Scottish roots, went out and traded and made a fortune with merchants, etc. But there's real historical reasons for the difference, and Glaswegians considered Edinburgh English.
So in order to thrive during the difficult past times when London was quite aggressive with Scotland, you really had to kiss up to England.
Exactly.
And the Edinburgh people were experts at that.
They did it, yes.
I think the Dubliners did that in Ireland, too.
Yes,
and then
they had
that whole notion of beyond the pale, which was beyond the
Palace,
English realm.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, Cullen, you are a Glaswegian.
I am.
And how would you balance Edinburgh and Glasgow?
Well, I like Edinburgh. I don't want to put it down too much.
You guys are so polite. it is a charming town.
Edinburgh's all right.
But let's get down to brass tacks.
But Glasgow, the thing that makes Glasgow, in fact, this is the current slogan for Glasgow to advertise the city. They say, people make Glasgow.
Mm-hmm.
So Edinburgh, yeah, it's
they
a nice
a big
city.
Slogan, sorry for jumping in, but they used to have a big slogan on the M8 saying, Glasgow smiles better,
yes.
Meaning Glasgow is miles better with a big happy smiley face.
Yeah. And we use miles better.
And we always having a poke at Edinburgh, and we'd come back with Edinburgh's miles drier, which is on the East Coast.
Miles drier.
Drier.
That might be consumption of alcohol too.
Oh, yes.
So now I was just in both Edinburgh and Glasgow, and Edinburgh is quite stately and pretty serious about his heritage. And when I go to Glasgow, you've got grand statues, but there's traffic cones on their hats that make them look like clowns.
Yes,
talk about that. There's a personality in Glasgow you don't find elsewhere.
Yeah, a lot of people in Glasgow don't actually even know the name of the guy. He's the Duke of Wellington, in case you're interested.
The Duke of Wellington, right there in the main, in front of this Georgian elegant temple.
In front of the Gallery of Modern Art. But most people in Glasgow know him as the wee man with the cone in his head.
Translate that. What is that?
Okay, so the wee man with a cone in his head. That's the wee, the little man with the cone on his head.
And so the government just lets the traffic cone, the orange traffic cone, go on the head.
It's been an ongoing battle, and recently it got quite serious because they said, the local council, they said, okay, we're going to remove this cone once and for all. We need to show that we're a clean and tidy city, and
And he's the Duke of Wellington.
The Duke of Wellington.
Waterloo, the Battle of Waterloo.
But that's a pretty big British thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're not just making a joke. You're making a joke with a little nudge at England.
Yeah. I suppose you could say
authority,
in a way,
but, I would say.
Yeah. Authority. Yeah.
They're iconoclastic.
They wanted to remove the cone once
so
and for all.
The people.
But the people protested. A Facebook page came up and loads of people joined that. And
that's good.
They got the cone to stay. So it's an icon of Glasgow today. It shows our sense of humour.
Our expert guides from Scotland are introducing us to some of the highlights of their beautiful country. Anne Doig is based in Edinburgh, Cullen Mares comes from Glasgow, and Liz Lister, who was actually guided me around Scotland for 2 weeks last year, she is from Fife, which is neither Glasgow or Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. And we've got this little thing going on here between these two great cities. Liz, what is your take on this?
Well, coming from west of Fife, I'm almost in the centre of Scotland, so I can slag off both of them and urge any travellers to include Fife on their itinerary. First of all, the Edinburghers, as we would call them, we would tend to see as being rather elitist, that the capital city, the city that has all the galleries, or it doesn't, but it believes that it has the culture. It was highly insulted when Glasgow was made the city of culture, and I couldn't believe this. So very much elitist and looking down on others. Whereas the Ouijis, the Glaswegians from the west, are very much about their sense of humour and their culture, but because of that, they're very insular. So coming from the higher education sector in a previous career, we used to joke that people in the west of Scotland, particularly in Glasgow, made their choice of university depending on which bus route it was on. So getting up in the morning and getting the first bus. So they weren't really looking broadly and widening their horizons. So yeah, to Fife.
And isn't there also some issue where Glaswegians identify themselves by their football team, whereas Edinburgh people identify themselves by what prep school they went to.
This is absolutely, around the dinner table. If you're having a dinner party in Edinburgh, it will all about being, have you got your child down? This is in the affluent areas of Edinburgh. Have you got your child down to a particular school which is carrying on family traditions? Whereas in Glasgow, they'll ask what your surname is, so they can size up whether you're Protestant or Catholic. And that, of course, is then when it comes into the football team, Rangers being Protestant, Catholic being Celtic.
So but Celtic and Rangers. This is interesting. Okay, so the Celtics would be the...
Just Celtic.
Celtic. I'm sorry. You got to get it right in classical football terms. So you got your Celtic, which would be Catholic and working class.
Well, no, this is really your middle class that we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. But Edinburgh has its areas of deprivation, its areas of working class, which would be much more similar to Glasgow. So we're talking about the more middle class individuals, the more affluent, who would be having these dinner parties rather than meeting in the pub.
So this is fascinating. And if I can just referee this discussion on Glasgow and Edinburgh, the main thing is they're both different, they're both welcoming, and they're like 45 minutes apart by train, and there's three trains an hour. Yeah. And whether you're going to base in Edinburgh or Glasgow, if you got 3 days, one of those should be on the train to go to the other city.
Yeah, exactly. They're so near to one another, yet so far apart.
And you could take a side trip out to the Britannia, for instance, when you're in Edinburgh, the great ship of the royal family, and probably takes no more time to go to Glasgow than it takes to go to what's the port where
Leith.
You know. Yeah.
I would say it's easier to get to Glasgow than go to Britannia if you've got an extra day in Edinburgh.
But I think
all you have to do is hop on the train and you're straight through to Glasgow.
And you're right there.
To get down to Britannia, you're talking about buses, too complicated. Go to Glasgow instead.
I think if you're planning a trip to Glasgow, you'll be rewarded by doing some research, because we see that Edinburgh is all laid out before you. It is absolutely beautiful, as Anne said. You know, you're coming onto a stage, whereas Glasgow, you experience. Mm-hmm. It's the smells, it's the people, it's the sounds. So do your research. It's not laid out for you.
Hold back with the smells there, Liz, please.
No,
the smells of Glasgow. That'll be a whole other interview. But I'll tell you, I've been going to Edinburgh all my life. I've been to Glasgow a couple of times, and it was hard to get my brain around Glasgow. But then I had the services of a good guide. He's sitting at this table right here, Cullen Mares. And Glasgow all of a sudden came to life.
Absolutely.
And there are great sights in Glasgow. But I want to talk about Edinburgh, because we're going to be in Edinburgh. And there are a handful of major attractions. And I'm just going to read these attractions. And I'd like you guys to make your case for which one would be the best one for somebody with limited time. You got the National Museum in Edinburgh, which is a best, I think, swing through Scottish history. You've got the National Gallery, which gives you an appreciation of the greatest art on canvas coming out of Scotland. And a lot of history that you can read into that. You got the Britannia, which is the great ship of the royal family, the yacht of the royal family, permanently moored now just outside of Edinburgh. The Portrait Gallery, which is a walk through the the portraits of all the great Scots. Beautiful. And you got the military museum up at the castle, which is one of the better military museums in all of Europe. Colin, what are your take on a couple of those sites for some advice?
Well, for me, I would say the best one to visit, if you can only visit one, it's the National Museum.
Why is that?
It's a walk through of Scottish history. You start down in the lower level. You start with the earliest people of Scotland, the Picts. Mm-hmm. You come up through the history, up through our wars with England, the Wars of Independence. You're up through the time of Mary, Queen of Scots, and her history.
And artifacts like mad. You've got you got fans where the elegant ladies would cool themselves that have pictures of Bonnie Prince Charlie that would have been... sort of a political statement.
Yeah, definitely. Tartan was a political statement then.
Yeah, and you get a sense of that. And then it's a state-of-the-art museum. And if I remember correctly, Liz, if you go up to the very rooftop, what do you find?
A view. I'll leave Anne to talk about the view over the city, but you've got one of the best views of the city. But just what you've got in Scotland is an almost unique diversity. And that's all down to our geology and the way in which we were formed, because that in turn formed our landscape, it formed our soils, our agriculture, our land use, and our history is based on that. So I would support Colin that in the National Museum, you can walk through Scotland's formation and its geology and how it formed. So if you want to start to understand Scotland, the National Museum is a fantastic starting
It really
place.
Brings you right up to modern day.
And don't you even have a garden on the rooftop?
Yes, this is one of my favourite places because... for visitors, they might miss this. There's only one lift that takes you up, the terrace lift. And I have to say about the only thing negative about the National Museum, it's a wee bit what we call higgledy-piggledy. It's not very easy to find your way round.
This is true.
You can buy audio sets to take you there. But there's a lift right at the back, the terrace lift. It's level 7. And from there, you get the most amazing views of the city. Not the ones that you see on pretty postcards. And that's why I really love it. You see the university, the castle, but also the different layers, because Edinburgh is really built on bridges. And for me, I think that's really exciting, all the different layers and textures. So if you're into photography, top of the
National Museum
is really unique.
But you've actually got an exhibit that has the different heathers and grasses.
Yes, and
parts.
Geology. And it's perfect.
Your calls for Anne Doig, Colin Mares, and Liz Lister are next at 877-333-7425 as we benefit from their insider's perspective on visiting Scotland. And a little later in the hour, folk singer Jim Malcolm from Perthshire treats us to a lyrical look at Scotland that you won't want to miss. It's Travel with Rick Steves.